Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
It's 17:30 GMT. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. I am Umaru Sanda Amadu. Tonight, I'm here with
Hawa Idrisu Mustafa.
And coming up over the next 90 minutes.
The inaction and opacity displayed by the EC not only jeopardize the integrity of our upcoming elections, they also erode the very foundations of trust and democracy upon which our nation is established.
Opposition NDC continues with the demand for an investigation into the disappearance of biometric voter registration kits. And this is ahead of the registration of voters. Also coming up, as a tax agenda on utilities fails to see the light of day, government is exploring a new avenue, which is taxing Ghanaians living here but earning income abroad. And later on Eyewitness News...
You see, it's very provocative. In the face of the whole scenario, all that we need to do is to come out with very, you know, inspiring statement to make to calm nerves of the youth.
That's the Tema Traditional Council speaking on the weekend's killing of two youth of Tema who were part of a celebration that led to a clash with the members of the Ghana Navy. Stay with 97.3 CTFM for more on this and many other stories on Eyewitness News. And in business,
government rejects reports of failing to reach a deal with international bondholders, rather, insisting it is refining the terms of an interim agreement to meet IMF targets.
That's from the City Business Desk in 50 minutes. Eyewitness News is live across Ghana on a host of affiliate stations and across the globe. We are on citynewsroom.com. We are also on YouTube, that is CityTube. We are on Facebook, and we are interactive. Join us on WhatsApp, 0549-986-996. 0549-986-996. If you're going outside Accra and want to know how to continue to listen to Eyewitness News on the traditional radio set, let me give you a number of affiliate stations that you can tune into. If you're going to the Upper West region, we are on Bugli Radio 88.6 FM in Wa. In the Upper East region, we are on Word 88.3 FM in Zuarungu. In the Northern region, we are on Dasuma 99.1 FM in Yendi. In the Volta region, we are on Holy 98.5 FM in Aplau. In the Eastern region, we are on Wright 90.1 FM in Somanya. In the Ashanti region, we are on Orange 107.9 FM in Kumasi. In the Bono region, we are on Greener 95.9 FM in Sunyani. In the Western region, we are on Premier 100.5 FM, Beach 105.5 FM, and Sky Power 93.5 FM. All of them are based in Takrady. This is Eyewitness News broadcasting from number 11, Dr. Martin Loop in Adabraka in Accra. The Electoral Commission has a plan to do a mass registration, and the devices that will be used for the mass registration have become a subject of controversy. There is a back and forth between how many are missing, how many have been disappearing, for which reason the EC is referring same to the police. The latest development is that the NDC is not happy. Today, the General Secretary of the party called a press conference, at which press conference, Fifi Fiavekwete, he made this statement. Listen to him.
...of the Electoral Commission. The gravity of this situation cannot be overstated. The inaction and opacity displayed by the EC not only jeopardize the integrity of our upcoming elections, but also erode the very foundations of trust and democracy upon which our nation is established. The consequences of the EC's inaction are profound and far-reaching. Each day that passes without a clear resolution and accountability only deepens the public distrust and casts long shadows over the fairness and transparency of our electoral process. The EC's failure to act swiftly and decisively in this critical moment could lead to an electoral process fraught with skepticism and questions of legitimacy, which Ghana can ill afford at such a pivotal juncture in our democratic journey.
So that's Fififi Avikwete, former MP, former Minister, General Secretary of the National Democratic Congress. Let's speak to Dr. Rashid Tanko Computer, his Deputy Director of Elections of the NDC. Sir, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, my brother. Spanda, how are you?
I'm well. Baraka Desala to you.
It is well.
Just out of curiosity and just to for emphasis, your name is Computer and we are discussing computers. Is that your real name?
Yes, Computer is my real name.
Like real name?
Yeah. It's part of my name. My full name is Tanko Rashid Computer. That is my full name.
Interesting.
And it's captured in my Ghana card, my travel document, that's passport, and all my, even my voter ID card. Unfortunately, the EC is trying to mess up with my name.
So your surname is Computer, so I can call you Dr. Computer.
Fantastic, that is it.
Interesting. Out of curiosity again, is that like a local name which sounds like a computer? Is actually the computer as in a device?
Yes, as a computer, you know, the spelling is the same, but it might mean different things, but it's the same spelling.
I was going to ask how you got that name or where you got it from, but it's okay.
I'm sure you ask somebody called Lab. Why the person?
No, I won't ask you. So let's leave it. That's what I said. I was just curious, but it's okay. Thank you. Your boss, the general secretary, says that there is some opacity with the Electoral Commission. Clarify for us what he means when he says that.
Sander, clearly this current Electoral Commission, they are not helping Ghanaians and they are not helping our democracy. Their posturing is just not helping the kind of peaceful elections that everybody is looking for. Because this is an Electoral Commission which we expect that they should be transparent. They should open up to civil society stakeholders like we, the political party, the NDC. We are major stakeholders. They need to open up, be transparent to us in all their dealings, but not to put some iron gate between us and their operations. Don't forget, if not because of the whistle blower who gave us this information about the missing of the laptops. In fact, it's not only laptops. There are even more. Only that we are holding them to what they still insert laptops. But we are still holding on to our chest other information which we have teased out the 35 questions for them to answer, after which we'll come out with the other information that we have. They were keeping it to themselves. They didn't want Ghanaians to know that items have started missing in their vault. These votes are kept under CCTV cameras and they are protected by heavy built military men and police at the EC headquarters. You go there, my brother, stand there. It's like you are in Somalia. The whole place cordoned with heavy built security people. So if we have this arrangement there and yet somebody can manage his way through to pick such vital gadgets out, and the EC kept this one for a very long time. They've been managing the information. They don't want anybody to know. Thank God, a whistleblower blew them up, gave the information to us, and we passed it to our parliamentarians. And you know, they were answering questions under oath when they met the parliamentarians at the Public Account Committee. So they couldn't lie. And only to come out and were rubbishing a press conference held by the minority leader when he spoke about the missing DVDs. And they were trying to say no DVD was missing. Only for us, when we met at IPAC just last recently, for them to admit that clearly some DVDs cannot be found. And they tried to use adjectives to describe the missing DVDs. One of the commissioners said they were vandalized. Okay, if things were vandalized, where are the pictures of vandalized DVDs? So clearly they are very opaque in their operations. And we think that with this kind of posturing, they don't want to give us free, fair, transparent election come December 7th. Hence our calling for investigation. We demanded three major items from them. First, we gave them 35 questions. And we want official response from them. That was the first demand. They should answer the 35 questions. The questions bordered on the integrity of the EC based on the missing DVRs. Second, we are... Yes?
Yeah, go ahead, land.
Second, our second demand is that we want forensic audit of the equipment they have at the Electoral Commission and the register currently. Senda, the current register we have, the one compiled 2023, is bedeviled with a lot of discrepancies. It cannot be used for any purpose. I'm surprised they are even going ahead to have a by-election with that kind of register. A register that people will go to polling station and cannot find their names in the register. Sandra, I'm not sure you have your name in the register because I don't know whether you voted in the district assembly election. A lot of my colleagues went to vote during the district assembly election and their names were missing in the register. So we are demanding an audit, forensic audit of that register before they can think of going for this limited registration. And the last one, the last demand is that we want an audit of the security setup of the Electoral Commission. And the commissioners themselves, their posture and attitude, and all the gadgets under their hair. This thing we are demanding is not for only NDC. It's for the soul of our democracy. The soul of our democracy must be protected. And that is why we are demanding all this.
I don't know if the EC would have answers to you on that, but Dr. Sribo Kweku of the Electoral Commission, Director of Electoral Services, spoke to Joy FM, in which interview he said that some of their personnel had been handed over to the police. I want you to just listen to that soundbite and give me a reaction to it.
What I can say on authority is that we lost one BVD in North Strong, and where that what happened was that they you know many package of this in the ballot boxes. You put your system and you seal. In the course of transporting, you go there, they couldn't trace the ballot box. So we report to the police. We have lost this, and these are the suspects. So investigate and let them go through the legal regime. Whatever has to be done, should be done. They have been interdicted. They are now going through the security investigation. So the police, I'm told that they will be arraigned before court soon. If they are found guilty, the law should deal with them. We suspect that they are involved. The investigation will establish whether we have prima facie case or whatever. Because we're talking about state property.
So that's Dr. Sribo Kweku. He's Director of Electoral Services of the Electoral Commission. Dr. Tankozo, you've heard him there. Does that satisfy your fears? Because your General Secretary talks about the skepticism with the Electoral Commission and other matters. The fact that they've handed over three of their own to the police, that should give you some confidence, shouldn't it?
Sandra, this Electoral Commission, they are always evasive in answering and then getting information out to the general public. We are taking this information with a pinch of salt because you remember, even the IPAC meeting we held, it was our behest. We wrote a letter to them demanding an emergency IPAC meeting. They were not ready to call an IPAC meeting on the matter. It was because of our expose that they quickly arranged and got some people and said, okay, now, part of our 35 question is that they should indicate when did they hand over those people to them. Because we know the day, the time those items were missing because our whistleblower gave us, our intelligence gave us all this information. And we are on their heels. We are asking them, the CCTV camera would have informed them, when did they get to know that these items were missing? Why were they keeping all these three questions? Why did they have to wait until when NDC started exposing this and then they quickly arrange some people and send them there? These are questions that we want the kings over there, the kings at the Electoral Commission, to answer. They shouldn't come and be telling us this cock and bull story of we want the due process of this. If you knew of this process, why were you keeping this information to yourself all this while until we trigger this investigation thing that they quickly ran to do this? Were they not denying that no BVDs were missing? Didn't they come out to hold a press conference and rubbish what we were saying?
But they said that it is BVRs, not BVDs.
And there are two. Sandra, there are two. The BVR is in respect of registration. That is what they are saying, that five laptops have got missing. Then the BVDs are the ones that are used for elections. And that one, they were rubbishing that it never happened. Only for them to admit at IPAC that it did happen, that they cannot have found some of them. And you remember they also wrote a memo to their directors that they should account for 28 of them. Apart from the one missing, they are also unaccounted 28 BVDs. So we are even talking of three issues. Three issues are bothering this current Electoral Commission, and they are being evasive like that. We can continue with this kind of attitude.
Very well.
That is what we are telling Ghanaians, to watch them, and everybody should help NDC. They shouldn't think that NDC is the only party that is looking for the soul of this country and our democracy. These things they are doing, and the civil society, Christian community, Islamic community, and the whole matter of all organizations known as Peace Council, they are quiet about this. We are just waiting. About 2-3 months, they will come to our office and asking us to come and sign anything. We'll walk them away. We won't sign anything. Can they see what is going on in the Electoral Commission?
Why are they quiet? You are not going to work with them.
No, what I'm saying that, why are they quiet with this serious issue that border on the integrity of Electoral Commission and the elections of Ghana? And they are quiet. Don't you know that these are the issues that bring instability in the country? Somebody who is supposed to be neutral, who is supposed to keep the soul of the democracy, because you are to conduct election to elect a president for Ghana and our parliamentarians who are going to decide our fate for us. And you start allowing things to be getting out of hand in your commission, and people who are supposed to speak are quiet. So they want us to go with this process, with this murky process up to December 7th, and they will come and declare all manner of results for us, and they will tell us that, okay, young farmer nyami, where they are nyami, yam penis hada, yam penis da. That's what we are telling them. We want the right thing to be done.
Very well. We have a by-election coming up, which you referenced, the Ejisu by-election. Is your party preparing to take part?
STEC will take a decision on this. The Functional Executive Committee will take a final decision on it, either for us to contest or not. So that one, yeah, we're waiting on that. When FEC comes out with a decision, we'll go by it.
Thank you so much for speaking to us.
The pleasure is mine.
That's Dr. Rashid Tanko Computer. He's Deputy Director of Elections of the National Democratic Congress. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka in Accra. Talking about elections and by-elections. Well, this will not be a by-election, but there's a need for the MPP to replace a candidate for the Akan constituency. How has that story for us?
Well, the NPP has confirmed the opening of nominations for the parliamentary elections in the Akan constituency of the Oti region. The decision follows the death of Ghana's former High Commissioner to Nigeria, Rashid Bar, who was the party's parliamentary candidate. In an interview with City News, the Oti Regional Secretary of the party, Jonathan Akpabi, urged aspirants and constituents to remain calm despite ongoing tensions.
We've opened nomination today, and we will close nomination on Wednesday. Then Thursday is going to be vetting. Then 27th of this month, election. That is the Congress. As it is now, with the nomination, the constituency just received the nomination this morning. And so currently, nobody has picked nomination yet. But I believe at the close of the day, people, I know some people who called yesterday that they are ready to pick nomination today. But the constituency secretariat is working on it, and I believe strongly people will pick their nomination forms. As it is now, there's a little tension in the constituency. So we are only pleading with the aspirants and their supporters to calm down. This is an internal election, and after definitely there's only one person that will win. And so after the win, we need ourselves. And so I'll just plead with them that they should calm down so that after the primaries, there won't be any problem in their constituency.
That was the Oti Regional Secretary of the NPP, Jonathan Akpabi.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Yeah, welcome back. The Ghana Water Company Limited has threatened to take legal action against individuals and companies indebted to the firm by the end of May 2024. The Ghana Water Company Limited additionally says it will publish the names of such companies and individuals that fail to honour their financial obligations in the national debt list, together with the amount owed. The institution says numerous measures instituted over the years in retrieving such debt have proven futile. Here are excerpts of a statement issued by the water company, read by my colleague Emmanuel Opon.
The company is persistently faced with a challenge of indebtedness from customers. Over the past years, the Ghana Water Company Limited has observed a concerning trend of accumulated arrears from some customers, posing significant financial strain on the company's operations. Despite various efforts to address this issue through revenue mobilization exercises, the accumulated debt hindered the Ghana Water Company Limited's ability to sustain its operations efficiently, including maintaining existing systems, infrastructure, uninterrupted services, and undertaking expansion projects to provide essential water services to the unserved and underserved communities. As a result, management of the Ghana Water Company Limited urges all its cherished customers to fulfill their financial obligations promptly.
Those were excerpts of a statement issued by the Ghana Water Company Limited threatening to take legal action against individuals and companies indebted to it by the end of May 2024. It was read to you by my colleague Emmanuel Opon.
This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka in Accra. Let's talk about tax. Now, this weekend, the government indicated that it was addressing the revenue gap that has resulted from the decision to abandon the VAT, that's a value-added tax, on electricity by enforcing compliance with the tax on foreign incomes of resident Ghanaians. What this means is that the tax on electricity has failed. The government is introducing a new tax regime, which is the tax on foreign incomes by Ghanaians who are resident here. So if you earn money here, I mean, you live here, you earn money abroad, you pay tax on it. Let's listen to Julie Essiem. She is the Commissioner General, newly appointed Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority, after which we'll do a quick interview on this. Please listen.
The measure that we've put in place is a compliance measure on foreign income of resident Ghanaians simply means anybody, citizens as well in Ghana, who resides in the country for 183 days and beyond, not Ghanaians abroad. We want to make that clear. This measure is not a new measure. This has been in the policy since 2023 and also even in the Act since 2015, but its implementation hasn't been that optimal. We are happy to say that in collaboration with the OECD, we've put strong measures, structural measures and processes in place to ensure, and I use the word confidently comfortable, that this measure will produce or yield the 1.8 and beyond.
So that's the new Commissioner General of the Ghana Revenue Authority, Julie Essiem. This particular approach, she says, has been on the books, has not been used as much as they plan to use it now. Is it good to abandon one and go for another? Francis Timoboy is a tax analyst. Sir, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, Omaro.
So when there's a revenue, when there's a deficit in revenue generation, the government must at all costs find a solution to it, and the solution now is in this particular area that the government is looking at through the Ghana Revenue Authority, taxing what they call resident Ghanaians, foreign income of resident Ghanaians. What do you think of that replacement?
So, Omaro, let's start from 2015 when we passed the Income Tax Act under Section 3. It says that if you are a tax resident in Ghana, your income from investment, business or employment, whether you got it from Ghana or abroad, you are supposed to bring it to Ghana for us to also tax it. And if for some reasons you have already paid tax on the foreign income, then a credit will be given to you. For tax resident persons, for individuals, we say that if you are a citizen, unless you have a permanent home outside Ghana and you live there for the whole of that year, or even if you are not a citizen, but you are physically present in Ghana, then any income you earn, whether in Ghana or abroad, we are supposed to tax you. Sometimes you can also be a citizen, but you have temporarily stayed outside and it is not up to 365 days. Then income that you earn from abroad must be brought for taxation in Ghana. Like the Commissioner General said, it is not a new law. It is just a compliance measure which has not been enforced over the years. So even though the VAT on electricity consumption for household has not succeeded, I believe that this is an additional measure that can also bring in equally substantial amount of revenue to the government.
So it's a smart approach, you would say?
Yes, it is, because in January, the Commissioner General announced that they have examined about 70,000 accounts, and the amount in these foreign accounts is close to $3 billion. And per their own assessment, they've analyzed and they have raised about $1.6 billion on individuals who own those accounts. And if they're able to collect this $1.6 billion, clearly it's going to be more than the projected revenue that was going to be raised from the VAT on household consumption.
How widespread is it going to be? So, for instance, if I were a correspondent of a foreign media house, but I'm based here in Ghana, the salary that is paid me by that media house abroad, that salary or that allowance, whatever you want to call it, would be taxed by our revenue authority. Is that what, in practice, they are saying?
Yes. So the law, like I mentioned, Section 3 says that if you earn income, it can be from investment, it can be from business, and it can be also from employment. You are supposed to disclose that income in Ghana for taxation purposes if you are tax resident in Ghana. If for some reason you do not, GRA opened the room for voluntary disclosure where you come up and say, for these years, I have not disclosed that income. And so I am coming forward to disclose it. And then they will tax you based on what you have disclosed. And then if you have already paid tax in those foreign countries where the income is coming from, a credit will be given to you. And so currently GRA is a member of the Global Forum on Tax Transparency. It's about 160 countries who exchange information about taxpayers, individuals, companies. And the purpose is to ensure that tax evasion is abolished. They just fight against tax evasion. So you never know. Your information can be disclosed by the foreign country. And remember, in 2018, the Parliament passed the Automatic Exchange of Information Act into law. So banks are able to share information about your tax affairs, the income that you've earned, they can share with any revenue authority. And when they share that one, and GRA gets to know that you did not disclose that amount, then that will amount to tax evasion and the necessary penalties will apply.
So the issue of implementation is a problem. Now, we do know that there are a lot of tax regimes, but implementing them becomes a difficulty. Why would people ordinarily go and report to the tax man and say, listen, here's the money I have, come and do your deductions? That would still be a difficulty. So implementation-wise, it's still going to be tricky, wouldn't it? Unless the GRA is going to now just start looking into everybody's accounts and questioning them as to where they got the money from.
Exactly. You know, before, access to information was quite difficult, and people always evade tax when the activity cannot be found out. Now, because of the exchange of information where over 160 tax authorities are exchanging financial transactions about tax potential taxpayers, it looks like if you don't come out and your information gets to any of the tax authorities, and in this case, GRA, they will invite you and the evidence will be against you. You wouldn't be able to, you know, evade. And if they find out that you fail to disclose that income, then they're going to impose those sanctions on you, which will even include imprisonment, because you know, tax evasion is a crime.
Very well, thank you so much. We'll wait to see how this implementation is going to roll out. Thank you for speaking to us tonight.
Thanks so much.
That's Francis Timoboy. He is a tax analyst. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka, in Accra. Hawa has some other stories for us. Hawa?
The KJTM market has again been disconnected from the national grid due to indebtedness to the Electricity Company of Ghana, ACG. The market is currently powered by a plant as an alternative power after close to a week since the disconnection by the National Task Force of the ACG. Management of the facility, in collaboration with the leadership of the various trader groups, has locked up shops of traders owing their bills in a bid to get them to pay the monies. President of the Federation of Kumasi Traders, Nana Akwesi Prempeh, is blaming the traders for their reluctance in paying their bills.
Electricity Company of Ghana have disconnected power to Kumasi City Market, that is a new KJTM market, since last Thursday evening. The National Task Force embarked on an exercise, so they were in Kumasi, and KJTM market was affected as well. And since Friday morning, the management engaged the leadership of the traders union. So the market currently is being powered by the gen set that has been installed in the market. And it is also coming with a higher cost, because if the genset runs 24 hours, we buy at least 10 barrels of diesel a day, which is on the higher side. But unfortunately, that is where we've gotten to.
That was the president of the Federation of Kumasi Traders, Nana Akwesi Prempeh. The Coalition of Aggrieved Customers of Men's Gold has submitted a petition to the Attorney General and Minister of Justice demanding an investigation into the reported sale of assets belonging to Nana Apia Mensa, popularly known as Namwan. The coalition claims that Namwan is allegedly involved in the sale of these assets, which are currently under the jurisdiction of the Yoko. Now, the convener for the coalition, Frederick Forson, stated in an interview with City News that they are optimistic about a swift response from the Attorney General regarding their petition.
In 2019, there was a court order that confirmed the seizing of all those properties, and it was published. And so our contention is that if it is not the state or the court that has not given that order for this item to be sold, then Attorney General should go into it by investigating to know what's the real factor. So that is why we petitioned the Office of the Attorney General for him to go into it. We have been told that there are other properties that are lining up for sale, and we don't want it to be caught off guard, because this matter is before the court, and we think that if the court has chosen those assets, we don't see how it is now being sold at the blind side of the state authorities, and the petition to Attorney General.
Frederick Forson is the convener for the Coalition of Aggrieved Customers of Men's Gold.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
You welcome back. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka, in Accra. Still ahead, we'll be hearing from the Ghana Private Road Transport Union on this directive from the Ministry of Transport that they should not increase fares, and that if they increase fares, the police should be alerted to that particular decision of theirs. But before then, Hawa?
Private legal practitioner Martin Kwebu wants the Economic and Organized Crime Office, EOCO, to withdraw its report on alleged bribery at the Ministry of Roads and Highways for lack of jurisdiction. He wants the Office of the Special Prosecutor to take over the investigation instead. The Ministry of Roads and Highways requested EOCO to investigate comments by former board chairman of the Ghana Revenue Authority, Professor Stephen Adai, who alleged that individuals seeking contracts were told to pay a 1 million cedi bribe upfront. EOCO has since concluded its investigations and indicated that Professor Adai's comments were unsubstantiated and highly presumptuous. Speaking to City News, Martin Pebu said the report is void and should be investigated by the appropriate authority.
The Ministry of Roads and Highways shouldn't have petitioned the EOCO, because EOCO cannot investigate corruption and bribery. No, it cannot. So what it is that EOCO used to have that mandate, but the Office of Special Prosecutor Act took away that mandate. So now that mandate belongs to the Special Prosecutor. For emphasis, so I'm talking about Section 80 of Act 959. So the meaning is that EOCO can no longer do bribery and corruption as a result of this Section 80 of the Special Prosecutor Act. So EOCO should have declined jurisdiction. They shouldn't have, especially as they appear to have done a very poor job of the whole investigation. Mm-hmm. So it means that they've done absolutely nothing. They should withdraw the report they've brought out and redirect the petition to their Office of the Special Prosecutor. I think that would serve governance very well.
Mr. Kpebu also says the Office of the Special Prosecutor can still investigate the matter, as it will not amount to a duplication of efforts.
Duplication of effort does not arise because what Yoko did in law is called void. When we say void, in the eyes of the law, it doesn't exist at all. So when somebody takes the same matter to the Office of Special Prosecutor, a matter of duplication of effort doesn't arise. It's not that necessary at all. It should be done, because what Professor Ade said is common practice. That's the standard. Unfortunately, very bad standard, though. But it's been there for decades. Everybody knows that, though. These government contracts, to get them a lot of the time, you have to create rice. So I'm surprised that even Yoko attempted to do it, and they were relying on Ade to give them every information. What I would have expected them to do is that they would have set up their own construction firm and try to go bid for the government project.
You had private legal practitioner Martin Pebu. The leadership of the Graduate Student Association of Ghana, GRASAC, has reaffirmed its decision to proceed with a planned demonstration following the government's lack of response to their concerns. The association earlier raised issues regarding the delayed payment of research support grant owed them by the government spanning the last 3 years. During an interview with City News, Claudius Ansongna, president of the University of Ghana chapter of GRASAC, emphasized their determination to move forward with their plans.
We haven't heard anything yet from government, but I also called the national president to find out if they had been contacted. No one responded to us as it stands. Some of our colleagues who are organizing press conferences tomorrow and tomorrow next. So right after that, if government, they still remain adamant. As I said, we are already planning on organizing a demonstration. We are already coordinating our colleagues all over the country. They still remain adamant. We will announce the date for the demonstration.
Claudius Ansongna is president of the University of Ghana chapter of GRASAC. The Tema Traditional Council has expressed concern regarding the response of the Ghana Armed Forces to a shooting incident at the Tema Naval Base on Friday, April 12. The clash, which took place during a procession as part of the annual Pledjo Festival, resulted in the death of two persons, leaving others with injuries. Following the incident, the Ghana Armed Forces issued a statement warning that further attacks would be met with appropriate action. However, in an interview with City News, spokesperson for the Tema Traditional Council, Niama Sompone, emphasized the importance of adhering to legal protocols in addressing the issue.
You see, it's very provocative in the face of the whole scenario. All that we need to do is to come out with very, inspiring statement to make to calm names of the youth, because tensions are high. So whatever comes out of your mouth should be something that is geared towards softening their stance. But if you start apportioning blame, when we know the actual truth, you are not doing the nation any good. Yes, because we also know that to the extent that the police car has been coming in and out, and we haven't had any altercation with them, I mean, how different is the community from the police? They are all security agencies.
Niama Sompone is the spokesperson for the Tema Traditional Council. Meanwhile, a member of the Defence and Interior Committee of Parliament, Peter Lancheni Tobo, is demanding a probe into the death of the two persons at Tema Newtown. Now, he tells City News in an interview that the government must constitute the probe and act on its recommendations.
We are asking for an investigation of the matter. Investigation of any time somebody dies, the primary reason is murder until otherwise proven. And it is the police who will investigate to say, this is murder, and they will look at it. If you want to investigate the riot, it's a different ballgame altogether. But as long as somebody is dead in there, I am calling on the police to take up the matter, investigate this matter, bring it to the public domain. If the soldiers who were there are at fault, and I'm sure that the military institution has its own internal mechanism to deal with it, and if it's a matter that Parliament will have to step in, why not? let's ensure that there is clarity on this matter. And let's ensure that this is nipped in the bud and it should never happen again. One life lost is one too many. Can't what me? If there are investigations and there are recommendations, recommendations will have to be executed by the executive arm of government. So if Parliament conducts an inquiry into a matter, a fact-finding into a matter, and concludes on the matter and presents a report to the plenary and it's discussed, and finally Parliament as a whole passes a resolution and hands it over to the executive, all we expect is that the executive arm of government will do what is needful. The various institutions will have to take it up and deal with them.
The former police officer and MP for Wild West is also calling for a review of Ghana's military training approach.
At any point in time that the civilian sees the soldier or the man in uniform wielding a gun to be an enemy, there is something that we need to do right. At any point in time that a soldier sees a civilian and perceives the civilian as a combatant, there is something that we are not doing right. But let's take it. In the past, the barracks was... Well, you used to be very far away. Bamakam was very far away from town, okay? In the past, it was difficult to find soldiers in town unless they're on duty for a particular purpose. Population has grown. Our barracks have been engulfed. And gradually, they are just living with us. What it means is that if the soldiers will continue to live with us as it is now, probably they also need to begin to look at their training curriculum and probably put in some level of civilianization in their training for them to appreciate the fact that you don't just necessarily deal with combatants. You are living with civilians, and you come across many of these things, and we should be able to have the skill to be able to deal with them without causing death.
Peter Lanchini Tobo is a member of the Defence and Interior Committee of Parliament and MP for Wild West.
This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Don't pay new transport fares yet, GPRTU to commuters. And then another story, the Ministry of Transport is asking the police to... take charge or actually deal with the trottle drivers or members of the union who decide to increase transport fares. What exactly is happening there in that space? Abbas Imoro is the Industrial Relations Officer of the Ghana Private Road Transport Union. Mr. Imoro, you're welcome to Eyewitness News.
Thank you, sir.
What is the current status of transport fares? Has it been increased or not? Are you working on an increment? What exactly is the situation?
Well, we are still on a negotiating table. We went yesterday, last Wednesday, the meeting was inconclusive. It was postponed to coming Wednesday. That is tomorrow next. You see, the situation is so fragile that we plead with all of you to get on board and make sure we will solve it nicely. Each time we feel we have to look for upward adjustment to lower fares, I think operators, we make our calculations, we look for what and what tools that we are going to use to justify why we want to increase our lorry fares. And then the transport ministry is also there to defend the general public or our clients who are the passengers. So whatever we place before the transport ministry, they will also cross-check to make sure we are saying this has gone up. We are saying this is up by this percentage. So we have never met once, and we are able to conclude why we are there on that very day. Normally, we present our grievances. We also have some time to check, and before, yes, whatever we presented, the true nature of why we are asking for the upward adjustment.
So who are the, as I said, who are the three parties in this negotiation? So
come again.
Who are the people, the groups that come together to agree on this transport fare?
Yes, a very good question. GPRTU, we are autonomous. You know, GPRTU, undisputedly, we are the leading private transport operators in the country. We operate all over the country, all the 16 regions, villages which has no names. We at times even name them. Then the GRTCC also represent the smaller ones. We could have a transport operator, you know, who operates only in Accra. Even when we say Accra, not all lorry station Accra, there could be only one station. For example, at La Paz. For example, at Ma station or at Carnation. So such a person cannot compare itself to some unions or any other union which is all over the country, who knows all the problems around the country. So the smaller ones are being represented by the GRTCC, Ghana Road Transport Coordinating Council. So when we meet, DPRQ is there, GRTCC is there, meaning all transport operators are there. This is what has been happening for ages until today. So this is how we go about it.
How binding is your decision? And when I say how binding, is it compulsory for your union members to abide by your decision?
Oh, this is a custom which is binding. Once upon a time, it is even only the GPRT who stands in for all transport operators. Until recently, that we have Sprinter unions, it wasn't like this. It was GPRT and the government. So it's very binding.
Okay, now that the ministry is saying that people should not increase fares and that if they do, the police should be alerted to same, what does that mean? Does it mean that your members who increase fares should be arrested by the police? What's your understanding of the statement from the ministry? And is it a statement you support?
I don't consider it that way. I believe it is to pave way for the outstanding procedure that is almost broken down. This is my belief.
Explain that. I'm not really clear.
I don't say, you ask a question and I say I don't say it that way. I believe it is to pave way for the existing procedure to prevail.
Okay, but are you aware of this statement from the ministry?
By chance, have you heard anybody has been arrested?
No, but I'm just looking at the communication in there that says if any driver...
It. You see, my brother, we must take at times the way things are. I am a professional driver. I speak for my people. That doesn't make me a perfect man. You see? But at least this is not the first time and this will never be the last time that we will agitate on upward adjustments in lorry fares, because most of us have different view in calculating things. I will say 1 + 1 = 2. Somebody say 1 + 1.5. It's not 1, it's 1.5. But finally, we've been coming to conclusion. So this is not the first time such a thing has happened. It will never be the last time. But I believe as we've been ending, finally, we all come to one conclusion and move forward.
I think you don't get my comment. I want to know whether you are in the know and whether or not you approve of the statement that was issued by the ministry.
I don't work, and we don't work at the transport ministry.
Did they consult they are going to issue?
My brother, listen to me. We earlier on brought our communique. That is what our general secretary signed, that we are pleading with our people. They should take it easy. We are still at the negotiating table, and that whenever we are through, we'll come out with it. As normal as we've been doing all the time. I'm not at the transport ministry, so I cannot hold brief for them.
Okay, but the question is that when the publications say that arrest drivers who are charging unapproved fares or refer drivers who are charging unapproved fares to the police, and this is from the Ministry of Transport, you speak for drivers. What is your comment on that?
You see,
journalist, I've been working with you for ages now. If you are looking for a particular answer to your question and you don't get, you try to twist the question in about 3-4 times thinking you'll get the answer you are looking for. I've told you, I don't work with the transport minister. I've told you, when the issue cropped up, our leadership came up and said, we are pleading with our brothers. Let us take it easy. As normal, we normally go through certain things before coming out. So let us take it and go by those steps. So this is what came from our side.
Okay.
And we wake up today to hear what you are asking from the transport ministry. Yes, of course, it is their liberty to contribute to make sure there is sanity in the system. But we are still telling you that, yes, I believe this particular issue was brought up to make sure there is total sanity in the system. The whole of the day, I haven't heard anything. That's why I'm saying I strongly believe my people have called back to the old system to make sure the system, it pays way for the system.
Okay. If there's a driver of your union moving between Kaneshi to Odoko now who is listening to us and who wants to know specifically whether as union secretary, union industrial relations officer, you agree with the transport ministry's statement, what would you say to him?
Who have said that?
I'm using a hypothetical if
question. At times you create problems for people. Are you instigating my people against me? And where have I said that leadership of the operators have agreed to that?
No, I'm not saying you have. I haven't said
any of our people. You don't have to bring this public consumption. And we are talking to the whole nation as well. So you don't have to bring in this unless any of our leadership has, of course, contributed to that. But if not, do you think it is wise to bring in such a conversation? Why nobody has come out to support such a thing or say something?
It's a question. I want to hear what your specific position is.
At times, you stay by nearby house, you hear them quarreling. Nobody has thrown a blow. But if you go in to separate them and you are not careful, you will force one of them to throw his hand. And this question, you are not supposed to ask such a question.
So you won't answer as to whether GPRT agrees with the decision or not?
I have worked with you for years. Journalists have worked with you for years because you wanted to hear something from us and you haven't heard that. You are forcing that into our mouth. Please, don't do that. Help us to make sure the situation is fragile. Help us to make sure we control this situation. Okay. We are Ghanaians.
No problem.
We'll live here today, we'll live here tomorrow. Until we are dead, we'll continue living tomorrow next.
Thank you for the prayers. When are we going to hear from you on what figures you've arrived at in terms of the fares?
God willing, we are meeting again Wednesday. God willing.
So maybe we can get the answers by Wednesday. Thank you for speaking to us.
You're always welcome.
That's Abbas Imoro. He's the Industrial Relations Officer of the Ghana Private Road Transport Union, GPRTU. A law lecturer, a criminal law lecturer and lawyer, has sent me a message. And he says, the police has no legal mandate to arrest any driver for violating administrative directive. Where is the criminal offense? It will be abuse of power and ultra-virus. Price control being a criminal offense? That's the question he's put forth. And we've called up our own colleague here in the City Newsroom, who is also a lawyer, Selom Koju. I don't know, he's joining us on the line. Counsel, you're welcome to Eyewitness News. I've just quoted a message from a law lecturer. Do you agree with him that, strictly speaking to the law, this referral to the police by the transport ministry may be wanting in law, or there's some other angle of the law that can be considered?
Well, thank you so much, Sandra. I'm here to see any specific law that bars, you know, drivers from charging particular fees. The GPRT is a private organization and a whole lot of things flow from there. The law really is that before something becomes an offense, the thing must be codified or put down in a written law. And then there should also be a prescribed punishment for same. So has this particular offense been stated in a written law? And what is or is there a punishment for this particular offense we are learning of, or the police or the ministry is trying to talk to us about? If the answer to the apostated question is in the positive, then fine, then the police will have a mandate to do so. In the absence of that, the police really have no mandate to arrest anybody for charging, you know, unapproved fees, as far as I know. I'm yet to see any law that points to that fact. You can talk about perhaps extortion, which would be a stretch, or maybe cheating or something, which could be a stretch. But in terms of the specific claim of charging unapproved fees, I'm not too sure about that. You know, penal matters are very specific, and there's a lot of burden on the state to prove. You know, which law are we talking about? Is there any such law? That law must be written. That offense must be defined. And the punishment for the offense must be prescribed. Do we have any of such things? If we do, then fine. But as far as I know and as far as I'm concerned, I've not seen any such law. And in the absence of any such law, I'm not sure the police will have any proper mandate in going around arresting people. Perhaps what could happen is if there is some confusion on a bus or in a vehicle in respect of fees that are charged, which passengers deem unapproved, and that is working to breach the peace, then the police may be called in to restore calm or quell the confusion. That is as far as, you know, my mind can go in respect of this.
So the state cannot force a private individual to do business in a certain way and charge a certain amount?
I'm not sure about that, because it's a private entity. You know, so what happens really is a convention, so that before fares are increased, the GPRTU, the Transport Ministry and other stakeholders meet and agree on what the reasonable, you know, increase should be. But this is not law. It is a convention the whole country accept. You know, and as we speak, that discussion could break down. And what does that mean? If it breaks down, does it mean that you price me out of business or I go out of business? You know, it's a private arrangement. And until that is backed by law, it will be very difficult for anybody to want to enforce that using criminal laws.
Very well. Thank you so much for speaking to us. Assalam Kojo Adonu. He's a private legal practitioner, also a journalist here with us at CTFM and CityTV. This is Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. We are coming to you from our studios in Adabraka, in Accra. Business News is next, and then we'll be coming back with more. Please stay with us.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
Time now for City Business News and Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. Details of our stories now. The government has refuted claims of failure to reach a deal with its international bondholders concerning the restructuring of approximately $13 billion of external debt. The Ministry of Finance remains confident in the ongoing negotiation process, noting that while there have been delays, an interim agreement has been secured to proceed with a memorandum of understanding with the creditors as requested by the International Monetary Fund, IMF. Sector Minister Dr. Mohamed Amin Adam has clarified that the interim agreement requires adjustment to align with the IMF's debt sustainability target, with steps being taken to refine the terms for a final agreement. Meanwhile, stakeholders within the finance space are hopeful Ghana will achieve a resolution with its official creditors in the coming days to pave way for the release of the third tranche of $360 million loan facility from the International Monetary Fund. In an interview with City Business News, an economist, Dr. Patrick Esumin, is, however, calling on government to be strategic to ensure it reaches a good deal.
It was always expected that the negotiations with the private commercial debt holders will be tougher. And it's going to be a lot more drawn out than the ones with the bilateral partners. I think this was largely expected, but at least this is the initial, you know, a few initial meetings and negotiations. In some sense, I think it's clear that the IMF is probably wanting Ghana to get a lot more relief than probably the bondholders are willing to keep. So I think it's a good thing that we don't rush to get a deal that will not serve the longer term interests of the country. So it's expected, but I think the government has to be patient and make sure that it puts its best foot forward. When you read the news release from the fund, they didn't clearly suggest that we needed to reach an agreement with the bondholders before it will go to the staff level agreement will go to the board. But it appears that there will be some form of linkage because of the comparability principle.
You heard economist Dr. Patrick Esumin. The Institute for Energy Security, IES, is projecting fuel prices to witness some marginal increment in the second pricing window of April. IES says the cost of petrol is expected to surge by 5%, while diesel is expected to rise by 4% due to international market dynamics and the cedi depreciation against major trading currencies such as the dollar. Research analyst with the Institute, Adams Yakubu, has been providing more insight in a City Business News interview.
Following the recent geopolitical tensions that we are seeing in the Middle East that have adverse impacts on the performance of crude and eventually refined products, also, the Ghana cedi in the last pricing window didn't do so well, losing some 2.43% of its value against the United States dollar. And the new directives of both reintroduction of the price stabilization levy and also introduction of a price floor by the MPA to regulate activities within the downstream petroleum sector. We are putting all these factors together, and owing that any changes do not happen within the policy regulation sector, the IES is projecting that liquid fuels could go up again in the second half of April, with gasoline seeing its price go up by some 5%. Gas oil could do some 4%. However, LPG could see its price come down by some 8%.
Adam Yakubu is a research analyst with the Institute for Energy Security. The Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana is urging Parliament to reject any report presented to it by the Transport Ministry representing the outcome of stakeholders' engagement on the Shippers Authority Amendment Bill. The group cites lack of engagement with relevant trade union groups, including the Food and Beverages Association of Ghana and the Ghana Trade Advocacy Group Ghana, amongst others, for input. Samson Asake Aringobit is Executive Secretary of the Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana, and he has been speaking to City Business News.
If you look, I had the opportunity to intercept the document. What I saw in that document, it will baffle you that the new proposal is saying that a shipper or an importer, if this law, this proposed amendment goes through Parliament and it becomes a law, you are in compulsory, especially if you are to import for commercial. Commercial here means if you are to import and go and sell, you are compulsory to register with the Ghana Shippers Authority with a fee. That fee, you don't even know how much you are going to pay. Again, if you register and pay the fee and you import for 12 round year round, you are supposed to renew with the Ghana Shippers Authority with another fee. And that is subject to the Minister of Transport approval and the Board of Governing Board of the Ghana Shippers Authority approval. I strongly believe that this will not allow this to go through.
Samson Asake Aringobit is Executive Secretary of the Importers and Exporters Association of Ghana. And that's it for City Business News and Eyewitness News. The Business News and Eyewitness News is brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. My name is Hawa Idrisu Mustafa. Up next is Point Blank.
97.3 City FM is a station we are broadcasting from Adabraka in Accra. My name is Umaru Sanda Amado. Right about now, we should have been bringing you Point Blank on Eyewitness News. Instead, there's something else that we need to bring you. I always keep reminding you that we are the only radio station that broadcasts in the English language with the right to bring you the English Premier League here in the Republic of Ghana. And so tonight there's a big game coming up, and the City Sports team, as usual, would bring you the live commentary from the UK, and also do post-match analysis and even pre-match analysis here on 97.3. So Eyewitness News is effectively over. It's now time to do some sports. And joining me in studio is a handsome, smiling Ben Art Abeku Otre.
But what the first name you pronounce?
Ben
Art. No,
what's your name?
Ben Art.
Masa, you support the Chelsea? I didn't say Arsenal, I said Chelsea. It's Arsenal that people are running away from. Chelsea, the manager.
If you want to bring the Arsenal conversation, you put me.
But what happened? What happened to Arsenal?
Well, they don't believe.
Are you sure?
The supporters sort of the players on the pitch of play. You know, those are the guys that need to carry the team along. I listen to some fans based in the UK, mm-hmm. and I watch some of their commentaries, and they feel the coach keeps repeating the same mistakes of the past, especially when they are getting very close to the title.
Yeah, so at what point did they start losing the plot? Because I know that Arsenal starts well and ends bad. It's always been a seasonal issue. But this season, there was so much hope, eh?
Mm-hmm. Because they were playing some good football, because they approach certain games with such a maturity.
So when did things start going wrong for
them? Just this game. This is a game that, you know, prior to the new Liverpool had, you know, there was no way Liverpool was going to stand tall over them should mm-hmm. they win that mm-hmm. game. So mm-hmm. they knew Liverpool were down. They should just go into the game with their heads up and win. It was simple. And City have beaten Luton by 5-1.
So was it complacency?
I feel was a bit of managerial errors.
But it's the same manager who has led them through to this stage.
Of course, but when it gets to a certain critical period, you need to overthink. You need to look at the magnitude of the game you are playing. You're playing against a Villa team that wants to be in the top four. Things must change. You must shield your defense, because playing Saliba and Gabriel is a problem. Always has been. So shield them. Play a 4-2-3-1 instead of relying on your 4-3-3, giving the Rice and these guys that opportunity. Put somebody like Thomas Partey in there, who is going to spread the game and keep the opposition team wanting, you know, looking for the ball in areas where it will allow your players to run into space, the Sakas, the Jesus to be running into critical, you know, spaces. And Martinelli, don't keep him on the bench. These are games that need top footballers to exhibit their play and intellect. But I mean,
when it came to it, so does it mean they've lost it? It's gone?
No, it's not gone. We have some few games to go. You know,
so there's still hope for them.
For us now, they've shown that even when you want to put sort of your hope in them,
don't just do it. So the hopes will start shifting from them, because they start well, like I said, and end badly.
Yeah, but
so this is another scenario of that.
Absolutely, but again, I repeat, they've shown, you know, glimpses of maturity this season in some games that everyone thought, no, Aston are going to lose it. They've played like pro. I mean, without your respect.
So they can come back.
You know, so they can come back. It all boils around taking good decisions. Because Arsenal, initially, in that season where you're thinking, when you bank your hopes on them, they're unable to deliver, they didn't have the squad depth. Now they have it. You look at the Arsenal bench and it's something to tell a story about.
So, considering what happened in Germany, is it Bayern
Leverkusen? Yeah, Bayern Leverkusen.
It was almost like, okay, the drought for some people has been satisfied. And so Arsenal was also going to...
They were on a special run. That was 120 years of not winning a trophy for them. And they kept winning. I mean, they never lost a game this season. So it was draws and wins.
Yeah, so that's what Arsenal was supposed to do. So we have a different story in England, just the same way.
Look, the Thierry Henry did that, and it's in the past. And I say that this club is having a rich history, that the players should just go and stand you know, and look at that history when you visit their
the Emirates?
Not the Emirates alone, but you know, not the Emirates. Of course, the Emirates alone has a certain history.
Mm.
But when you go into their trophy room is what I want to talk about. They should just go and stand there, look at the pictures on the wall, look at the trophies. And
the legacy that has been left.
Absolutely, the legacy. And calculate the number of years that the space between them and that which they have there.
The past glory.
At them. Yeah. And then try to do something. And I say, when a manager gives you the opportunity to start a game, that's enough. It's enough. I mean, he's giving you all the surety that, look, you are the guy who can do the job. You just don't go in and feel frightened and not want to play. At the point, that's what you see the Arsenal team.
When next are they playing and who are they playing?
Well, I must check that and let you know.
It's like you've given up on them. You don't even want to know. Let's talk about tonight. Who are playing tonight?
Well, there are it's Chelsea, Everton who are playing tonight, and it's one team that is suffering from points deduction.
Everton,
and it's been very difficult for them this campaign because the Premier League's profit and sustainability regulations is really on them. You know, so initially it was 6 points; they had to go and try and fight it to see if there will be a reduction, and then there's 2 points again. So it's like as they fight to want to get up. They are dragged.
Where are they now?
Oh, they are somewhere battling it out of relegation, you know, and it makes it difficult. They are 16th now. The points margin is 27 for them, and they are just sitting about now because of the deduction. Luton have 25 points, and they have 27.
Mm-hmm.
So look at the distance.
So they are battling for relegation.
Yeah. And it makes it dangerous.
And so they need to be winning.
They have to win.
Starting from tonight.
They do not have a good record against Chelsea.
But Chelsea is in a comfortable lead, huh?
As for Chelsea, they have cemented the sort of 9th, 10th position. They are 9th currently.
Not top 40, 4.
40, oh, no. They have chances of getting into that space. They have a game outstanding. And they just need to win. Currently, but that consistency is the problem.
So currently, what's the top of the table looking like?
Manchester City, 73 points. Arsenal, 71. Liverpool, 71.
So Arsenal still hope. If we fast and pray, they can go.
They have to be consistent. They have to focus and.
But we can also fast for them. You never know. This is maybe spiritual. Can fast for them.
Well, you're saying it. I didn't say that.
No, you can fast and pray for them.
Are you going to fast and pray for Arsenal?
No. I'm wasting my intestines.
When you fasted, did you pray for them?
No. I didn't. Even United, I didn't pray for them.
Why?
We've given up on United the same way that you have given up on. Charlie, let me leave you in the studio. Why? So we are having the match coming up tonight, Premier League, Monday night football. Chelsea versus Everton coming up next.